Fearless, informative, and unfettered. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed on TNT. I'm your host, Mark Morano. All right. CNBC News, breaking news alert. The entire automotive industry has been rethinking plans for electric vehicles. Ba-doop bang. The latest EV disaster for our central planners, Ford to delay all electric SUV and trucks to focus on hybrid vehicles across the lineup by 2030. In other words, the EV goals and mandates are crumbling to dust. And a hybrid, just in case you aren't familiar, is basically a gas-powered car with battery backup. Sometimes they can be a battery car with gas backup, but the point is they have great range, and it's basically looking, I look at it as a gas-powered car that has a battery optional. If you run out of gas or if you want a little extra juice, doesn't make sense to buy, I don't think. Still, you're paying a lot for that battery. You're going to have to recycle it. You're going to have to replace it at some point. It's going to add to maintenance costs, a whole slew of problems. But hey, it's not an EV. It's not the electrified revolution that the Biden administration has been touting, and that the Great Reset and that the net zero goals and that the EU and Canada and Australia. Steve Malloy at junkscience.com, a friend of the show who was on as a succinct line to describe what we are witnessing. And I was on Fox News not that long ago calling it the controlled demolition of the auto industry in favor of just turning it all over to China. Why not? We've turned our industrial base, everything else. Why not just turn over everything to China? They're going to be our masters. Ford, this is what Steve Malloy at Junk Science says. Electric vehicles will go down in history as a case study in failed government industrial planning. So they will go down as one of the greatest failures of government industrial planning. And it's amazing because it was a train wreck from day one. It was all bubbly, lofty rhetoric. And the automobile industry went along with it because these are the regulators who squeeze them by the, I won't say the word. And they tell them basically, you have no choice. Especially the more that they wreck their sales through all these mandates, the more the automakers want those government subsidies, the government funding, government bailouts. They want favorable regulations. So they're all in. Case in point, which is what I want to focus on today. I'm going to show you a series of an interview done by, I believe it's Yahoo News. Yahoo Finance is what it's from. And it's from a, Pras Subramanian, their senior reporter, who does a one-on-one interview with a Toyota executive. This is Jack Hollis, Toyota executive, vice president, head of Toyota Motor Sales in the U.S. So he's the head of Toyota for U.S. sales, and he's an executive vice president for all of Toyota globally. His point on this is that the EV transition, it's going to take longer than the net zero people think. It's just going to take a little longer. We're all in on it. But he says some fascinating things. As you watch this interview with Jack Hollis, the Toyota executive, it just drips of the wimpy, pathetic, executive level talk and culture that we have in our corporations today. This is a guy who wouldn't stand up to government if his life and family depended on it. He says a lot of very good things, and he says a lot of very interesting things and informative things. But ultimately, I have no respect for the guy. If you listen to the way he talks, he's dancing around the issue. He wants to play ball with the government. The last thing he would ever do is diss the net zero climate agenda. He knows he'd be canceled like that. Probably makes millions, tens of millions. Got a golden parachute, the guy's set for life. But he knows one word of dissent, one word outside of the little box he's allowed to stay in, and his life is gone. Just like that. He's finished. He'd be finished. So keep that in mind as you watch it. This is Jack Hollis being interviewed by Yahoo Finance. The EV transition is likely to take longer, and he breaks down some of the stats. Clip one.
How do we reduce carbon emissions as fast as possible, everywhere possible, with everybody participating? See, our goal is to have everybody who, in globally, to participate in reducing carbon emissions. Does that mean EV is the answer? Well, some people in government said it is. We're saying it's a answer if we want to do it faster, if we want to have everybody included. And so there's a lot of pieces there. You know, the EV itself is a very high transaction price. Not everybody can pay that. Or infrastructure, not everybody can even have it in their home because they're living in an apartment. Or there's, we can go on and on. But what if you're in the cold states, and how does cold affect the EV? So it is part of the solution. And so Toyota itself, we're all in on electrification, meaning choice of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, EV, and hydrogen to solve that question.
Okay. He's basically laying the ground. I mean, this is focus group. This is thought about. This is every instinct in his life, bringing all his talent and knowledge to present this so carefully crafted. And by the way, he creepily looks like Apple CEO Tim Cook, who is about as creepy a CEO as you get. Does a whole video with Mother Earth and praises China. Apple and I, it's the same. You can't even tell them apart. It's this corporate executive speak that they literally have to clip your testicles in order to even speak like that. All right, I'm sorry. I knew I was trying to avoid crude sexual reference, but I can't help it. You know, it's neutering. This is neutering for these executives. He is a well-neutered boy we're listening to. And again, I know I'm being offensive and insulting, but he deserves it. Jack Hollis, Toyota executive, just to reiterate, we want to help people reduce emissions as fast as possible. We're all in on this. Of course, what are you going to do in the cold states? That's kind of hard. If you live in an apartment, that's kind of hard. And then we are all in. But you know, don't worry, we're all in. I'm not going to lose my job. We're all in, even though we're facing magical thinking. Remember, I told you Saul Friedman, the Nazi historian, UCLA, Holocaust survivor. This is magical thinking, using the government bureaucracy to enforce magical thinking. Well, here this guy. This Toyota executive, Jack Hollis, the president of U.S., the head of the U.S. Toyota division, is all in on magical thinking, but he's questioning some of the magical thinking. This is clip two. He gives you some more interesting stats. Jack Hollis, Toyota executive.
Because if you think about it, even though the EPA has changed last week, 2032 hasn't changed.
Right, not that far, not the long way.
It's a short time if you consider the fact that in the last 10 years, we've gone from 0% to 8% of the market.
Full EVs.
So full EVs have gone to 8% of the market. Now, from 2042, eight more years. So that was 10 years to get to there. The next 8 years, we want to go to 67%. That's 10 years to get to 8%. Some of those math is very difficult. What we want to do is, if you can use all of electrification to solve the consumer's desire to participate in reducing climate, now we can get somewhere. We just think 2032 is a little too short term, and we have to go a little bit longer so that the customer can come with us on that journey.
I'm calling bullshit. I'm a consumer, I'm a customer, and I don't want to go with you on that journey. We got to move the customer there to have the customer take us along for their desire to solve the climate crisis. Bullshit! Okay? You're a bullshit Toyota executive spouting absolute crap to the public for your corporate speak. Your testicles have been removed. All right. Again, I'm sorry for this. This guy, Jack Hollis, is really pissing me off at this point. We got to work the consumer along and get them to have their desire to reduce. Bullshit. No one wants to do that. This is when you go on Amazon, we reduce carbon this much. And blah. Bullshit. That's all everyone sees when they look at that. Maybe you'll get 25, 30% of the customers. Oh, that sounds good. I want to go and buy that piece of plastic shit from China because they're more aggressive in reducing their carbon footprint. Okay, let's continue. This is Jack Hollis, Toyota executive, head of that, giving some really, I think this is the clip where he gives the really interesting stats about the people who already bought an EV, the people who already own EVs are likely the ones who are already going to buy it, that the sales aren't going up for the all-electric vehicles. Clip three.
So do you think that the hybrids, the plug-ins, mild hybrids, can they get us to where we need to be from a CO2 emissions point of view?
Absolutely.
By 2032, for instance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the elements is that we have to remember, and I've shared this a couple of times, sorry if we've said it before, but
Well, I think that clip was a little short. I don't know. He was about to make a statement. That's a glitch there. But Jack Hollis, the Toyota executive, is now talking about the hybrids. I believe the next clip he will tell you about. I'm trying to get to the stat clip. If I don't have it, I will read it to you. But let's continue the next clip with Jack Hollis.
The amount of the minerals needed, we have to think about as our precious metals or limited resources. And one BEV, if you use the same amount of resources, I can build you six plug-in hybrids, reducing significant amount of CO2 and costing about $6,000 to $8,000 less per vehicle. Or I can give you that same material, that one or that six, and I can build you 90 hybrids at another $6,000 less and more, so much more affordable. So the issue is in each one of these, they're reducing carbon very quickly, but I'm getting more participation. And I think it's important to understand we need everybody to participate if we're going to really make a difference. If it's just EVs, if you look at it, it's only 8%. How much is that really reducing when a majority of the people buying the EVs right now are buying it as an extra vehicle in their fleet? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of pieces to this. That's why we think taking a little longer time to get to that goal will allow all of us to participate.
You hear him there, the Toyota executive. We just need more time to get a little bit more time. I don't want to offend my net zero masters. Oh, master, I'm here to serve you. I would never say a nary word. I'm loyal. But we might need just a little more time. It's a little unrealistic. He went on to say, well, he said this 8% of U.S. cars are only electric. A majority of the people buying electric vehicles now are buying it as an extra vehicle in their personal fleet, which means every automaker. This is why I led with CNBC, corporate media. The entire automobile industry has been rethinking plans for electric cars. Buick dealerships don't want them. Every major automaker is just like this. The neutered executive out there delicately saying, you know, it might be a tad unrealistic. It's holistically unrealistic. The consumers don't give a flying bleep about going along on the ride to solve climate change by buying their expensive, crappy, unreliable car. Sorry. And he also said something else very interesting is that he acknowledged the minerals, the rare earth mining. And he's, again, the most gentle, unoffensive, neutered way he could. Oh, you know, this may not make that much sense. All the minerals, we're going to need all these and it's going to overload the system. All right, I think we have one more clip. Clip five, he releases another telling statistic.
But what does that say about the industry? The industry itself is also going to see a little bit of growth this year. We're going to probably get real close to a 16 million market, assuming that's the case. And I still think it might even be higher over that. And I don't know so much if it's consumer confidence as it is more of a pent-up demand. And the reason I say that is the average age of a vehicle now is over 12 and a half years old. It's the oldest fleet in the history of the U.S.
It's unbelievable, right?
So yeah. At what point people are saying, I, it's time, I have to go buy a vehicle. We're still seeing that play in some of the dragged on. You talk about long COVID. This is called long demand from COVID. And I still think that's really healthy for the industry.
He did release an interesting stat. The oldest vehicle fleet in the United States. Gee, I wonder why people aren't getting new cars. Let's see. Bans on gas-powered cars. COVID lockdowns, supply chain, inflation, wages, economic woes, the green agenda, food costs going up, energy costs going up, the government intentionally rationing vehicles with all of their insane unelected bureaucrats, and no one voted for any of this. But the auto executives are like, we want the citizens and the consumers to go along on that ride to solve climate change. It's mind-blowing. I know a lot of people are like, oh, finally, Toyota's speaking out. No, I'm sorry. Pathetic. Jack Hollis, the testosterone your balls are waiting for you at pickup after you're done with this interview. It is pathetic. This is who we have represented. This is the corporate government collusion. This is how you get banks.
We're not going to give out car loans to people who buy a gas-powered car, is the bank in Australia.
Oh, wow, did your ESG score just go up? Is BlackRock giving you bonuses? Are they staffing you? That's how this game is played. It's nuts. Okay, I got to calm down. Next clip is clip six, And this is about the EV charging grid vulnerability. And I've been warning about this. This is from Newsmax. Chris Plant's the right squad. The guest is Matthew Foldy. And I've been warning about this as well. When you have a national charging grid, the next virus that comes along, you don't need a stay-at-home order. They can just, when they ban gas-powered cars, they can just like the lever in the Frankenstein film, 1930, they can just pull the lever and demolish the castle. They'll be able to pull the lever and make you stay at home and stop all vehicle traffic. Remember, the Biden administration wanted to do a ban on interstate travel in COVID when he was first elected, but they realized maybe the public wouldn't stand for it. I think they could have got away with it. We were like lapdogs. We would have taken anything to keep us safe. All right, clip six about the grid.
They had to determine if they were going to give that to Iran or to try and build like one electric vehicle charging station. But I think regarding autonomous vehicles, I'm a Maryland driver. We have great reputations. I don't know why you would ever want to replace human drivers with robots. But even on the EV point, listen, remember Jen Granholm, the energy secretary's failed road trip. She couldn't charge. The cops were called. But right. Literally this morning, the Wall Street Journal reported on how EVs and other digital controlled products open extra access to the grid, which enemies can exploit. There are huge problems we're not even thinking about if you make a massive push towards vehicle electrification, which they're sprinting to, but failing to do.
And there you have it. I mean, all we can do is hope that this insane experiment, the intentional rationing collapse of energy, food, transportation, and our free speech, as well as our financial freedom, banking, central bank, digital, all this has to fail, has to be resisted. The great resist. We cannot allow the great reset to continue. And we cannot allow deballed executives like who we just saw with Toyota, Jack Hollis, the Toyota executive, head of Toyota sales. I should get him on the program. You think he'll want to come on? I don't think so. I would love to have him on. I don't think he would come on. All right. Enough of that. Let's turn to something less controversial. We have to take a break. But when we come back, we are going to interview Linda Tyler, author of the Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. And we're going to ask the question, should Americans be eating Bill Gates' fake meat? We're going to talk about food supply, food processing, the food groups, the health of our food supply, the national security angles to it, and Bill Gates' involvement in it. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. And my apologies for the crude testicle talk and curse words, but that Toyota Jack, I keep wanting to call him Jack Russell, but that's not his name. It's Jack Hollis. Jack Russell is a terrier. I guess a good neutered boy terrier. That's what he reminds me of. Jack Hollis, a Toyota executive. Anyway, we'll be Unleashed with Mark Morano. We'll be right back with the author of the book. Stay tuned.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor, creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Caution. You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Trying to bring it down a couple octaves here. Okay. Joining us now, Linda Tyler, author of the book, The Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. Delicious whole food recipes to reduce inflammation and promote health. Welcome to the program, Linda.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to be here.
All right, let's talk. First, I want to ask you, like, I know Tucker Carlson went to a Russian supermarket recently, created quite a controversy because he went through this Russian supermarket and showed they don't have all the processed food, the additives. They have a lot of whole foods, fresh foods. They don't even have a lot of the breads, especially the processed breads that you have that stripped out all the healthy grains and other nutrients. And it seems like Europe in general has a healthier food supply. And even, I hate to say this because I'm not saying I necessarily support it, but they ban a lot of different chemicals in the food and the certain processing. Is American food, I mean, on one hand, we're the breadbasket of the world. On the other hand, are we the leaders of junk food in the world? Is there any country that comes close to us with our diets?
Well, unfortunately, we've influenced a lot of cultures. And for the worse, food cultures that used to have pretty whole food plant-based diets, or at least whole foods diets, they started importing our fast food restaurants, our foods, our snacks, our candies. And so really around the world, there is a lot of processed foods. I'm not sure if we're the absolute leader in processed foods consumed, but I'm sure we're near the top and we're certainly the leaders. And I think we sort of made it happen. But yeah, I think Europe and Russia and in general, they spend more of their income on food. They have more whole foods, less processed foods. Our foods, you know, a lot of our foods that go into processed foods, there's a lot of government subsidies for some unhealthy foods. And that's why a lot of fast food is cheap. And so, yeah, we're kind of in a bind now that there's so much processed food available. I read somewhere recently that about 58% of our diet is processed foods. So that's what's in the stores, you know, and that's what's on the corners in terms of the drive-thrus. So it really takes some effort to eat in a whole food way here.
Well, if you go back, I guess a lot, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but did a lot of this happen with the World War II draft? I've always heard the popular, it could be a myth, but the popular sentiment is, I don't remember, I think it was like 30% of the U.S. troops, when they volunteered or were drafted, failed, that basically were considered malnourished by the government. So this caused, essentially, we need to fortify food and we need to increase vitamins. And that's why you get like processed bread fortified with 9 essential minerals, or you could have Captain Crunch fortified. They basically crush up vitamin pills in these sugary cereals, and they say they're fortified with 9 essential vitamins and minerals. Was that the origin of this, when the government said, hey, we can't allow our population to be malnourished by their definition, and that brought in this whole sort of revolution and government intervention and government pushing of processed food to increase the plentifulness of food? Am I off base there, or what's the strain that I'm trying to follow there?
It's a great question. And definitely in the early to mid 20th century, the government did try to figure out how to fortify foods to make sure that some essential vitamins, like adding iodine to salt was one solution, adding extra vitamin D to milk. So that has been a long tradition, almost 100 years in our country. And at first it was government driven. And now it's, you know, it's a feature that a lot of manufacturers tout and try to get more vitamins packed into their foods. But really, I think that's somewhat separate from the burgeoning of processed foods. And I think that was closer to the 60s and 70s as a couple of trends happened. There was just a lot more research into food preservation and food manufacturing. And it really became an industry at that time because of technological advances. And then also there was just an explosion of marketing and, you know, trying to get returns for shareholders in the corporate world. That's when the corporate world started changing to really saying we have to deliver profits now. And that led to a lot more marketing as well. So when you combine the food science and the industry and the big factories with very, very motivated companies to sell to people using all the psychological research that had been developing around marketing, you know, that's the combination that really led us to this 60% of processed foods that we eat.
In the 1970s, I believe they changed the food pyramid, or they created it. I can't remember now. But if people just said, I'm going to follow the United States government food pyramid, are they going to lead a healthy, nutritious life?
I think healthier than a lot of people do. That would be a good start. I don't think it's ideal. I'm not an expert on the food pyramid, but I know it's a compromise. You know, there are a lot of different experts, a lot of different lobbyists and influencers. So I would say it's probably not ideal. But, you know, it, you know, even the last time, I think they said a lot of people, especially young males, eat too much protein. You know, protein can in excess amounts can really strain the kidneys. So there's some development and movement around the food pyramid.
By the way, I would say 30% of the people I know, casually friends, they're the keto diet, which is you just sort of referenced, is all about people just eating almost no carbs and just loading up on protein, meat, meat, eggs, fish, just nonstop. Is the keto diet, as you understand it, is that healthy, or is that, does that increase inflammation in our system?
It does. I'm not an expert on the keto diet, but I know people have, you know, great, at least temporary results in terms of weight or blood sugar. Some people, I know also that there can be a real boomerang effect when people go off it, and most people don't stay on it on a permanent basis their whole life. It's you know, people at some point say, I got to have some bread, you know, I got to have something that I... You know, it's definitely difficult, but so saturated fat is a feature of lots of foods on the keto diet, and saturated fat is a trigger for inflammation in the body. So we may not be able to feel chronic inflammation, but if we're eating a lot of saturated fat, you know, studies, lots of research has shown that is inflammatory, either because it's creating an imbalance of the good and the bad bacteria in your microbiome, your gut microbiome, or it's triggering free radicals that the immune system doesn't like. So the immune system tries to get rid of those, or it's causing leaky gut that lets other things into our system that triggers inflammation. So saturated fat is one of the components that really is inflammatory.
Okay, now your book is called The Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook, Delicious Whole Food Recipes to Reduce Inflammation and Promote Health. What led you to write this? What's your background, and why did you feel the need to write this book? And exactly explain the inflammation and how it harms your body, and when this was discovered, and how long foods have been the cause, and how our diet causes this inflammation.
Sure. So I became a vegetarian in college way back when, and it was mostly because of animal welfare issues. I didn't think we should kill animals. And then after that, I found out about egg farms and dairy farms, and I didn't like the way animals were treated on those farms either. So I became a vegan, which means giving up eggs and milk and cheese. And then about 9 years ago, I went to a conference and found out about whole food plant-based eating, which is vegan, but without the vegan junk food, without the vegan cheese or the white bread. So you can be a vegan and eat pretty unhealthy. But this was based on fairly recent research showing lots and lots of health benefits of eating whole foods and plant-based foods, so avoiding cheese, avoiding meat, avoiding fish even. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing that, you know, I can eat for animals, I can eat for the environment, and then I can eat for my own health. And then I started reading. So I volunteered for a few organizations that worked on plant-based eating, and I found that inflammation was connected to all sorts of chronic diseases like heart disease and cancer. And I myself don't have any chronic diseases like that, but certainly my family has had a lot of that, congestive heart disease, stroke, Parkinson's, cancer. So I've lost parents and grandparents to all the diseases that I was reading that inflammation is connected to. And inflammation is also related to obesity. If you gain weight, that can trigger inflammation as well. And then it's also related to aging, which really got personal for me because I'm entering that time when I don't want to get frail. I want to remain vital. I want to remain healthy and self-sufficient. So I thought, if inflammation is related to all those things, you know, I want to be able to be part of the solution. And number one, I wanted to be able to explain it to other people because I personally think the way it's explained is very poor. When I went to see, like, what is inflammation? It's like, it spreads in your body. Well, why? How? So I did dig into that. I wrote a chapter on that that's in the cookbook. I rewrote it two times to get it super clear. And then I wanted to share recipes that have foods that have been shown by research scientists to be anti-inflammatory. So not just to avoid foods that are inflammatory, but also to eat more foods that are anti-inflammatory. And so what I did was create a list of anti-inflammatory superstars like berries and ginger and turmeric and garlic and tea and all sorts of other dark purple, blue, black vegetables and fruits and celery and apples. So tons of, you know, just grocery store foods, not expensive supplements. But I found all those. I found the research articles around those. I made that list and then I designed my recipes around those. And so that is what I offer, an explanation of inflammation, anti-inflammatory superstars, and then the 80 recipes, each one with a full page photo so people can see what they actually look like when you're done. So basically, the way I explain inflammation is that it is the immune system doing its job. And in many cases, overdoing its job, and we can trigger the immune system to overdo its job. And that's when things get unhealthy for us. So the immune system, of course, we know the immune system and immune cells, they respond to invaders. So like a bacteria enters our body or a virus, a cold virus, a flu virus, and the immune cells try to capture it, get rid of it and go away. And or if we get a cut, the immune cells come to the site of the cut and say, are there bacteria that entered? We got to get rid of those. Or a lot of our immune cells actually line our gastrointestinal system. So they're there looking for foods and things that come into our body through our mouths and are not good for us. And they're looking to get rid of those. So our immune system, you know, billions of immune cells are on constant alert, looking for invaders to get rid of. So what we do when we eat foods that are not good for us, like too much saturated fat, we trigger the immune system. And the immune system kind of has one response. Its response is to send out chemicals that swell local blood vessels. It makes those blood vessels more permeable so fluids can get into our tissue. It sort of tries to get rid of this bacteria or whatever's causing the problem. And sometimes there's collateral damage in terms of tissue. So you're probably starting to say, that sounds like swelling, that sounds like redness, that sounds like more blood, warmth. And that's the immune response. And that's what we call inflammation. So inflammation is fine if we're getting rid of a cold virus and we have a sore throat, a swollen throat, we have aches and pains, that's all inflammation. Or if we have a sunburn, that's actually inflammation as well. And so what we don't want, though, is we don't want the immune system to react to the plaque that's building up on our arteries. And the immune system tries to get rid of that. And so our arteries get swollen and as well as covered with plaque. And the immune system reacts to body fat. Body fat actually releases pro-inflammatory molecules, and the immune system reacts to that. So we're having all these triggers of the immune system that then make it hard for our body to recover from all that kind that all that inflammation. And too much inflammation can just start to weaken our tissues, and that's why it's part of aging. It can just sort of damage us and make us weaker.
Well, to me, the obvious question would be, how do you know if you have too much inflammation? Can you go to the doctor and just say, hey, can you give me an inflammation test? Is it a sedimentation rate test, a SED test? Or how do you find out what your inflammation level is, other than just guessing, oh, I have a bad diet, it must be high?
There are tests for inflammation. The most common one is it tests C-reactive proteins in the blood. So you can ask for a CRP or C-reactive protein test, and you will get you'll get your results. There are some of these inflammatory molecules that they actually do have fairly common blood tests for. You can do that.
Okay, and then in terms of meat, are you against, you know, is your book recommend against no eating meat for diet? You said you didn't do it because of animal welfare. But is meat eating bad, or can it be included in your sort of diet presentation for health if it's limited? What kind of level of meat eating do you recommend, or do you recommend everyone go off meat?
Well, that's kind of a trick question, right? Yeah. So for myself, I don't eat meat. I haven't eaten meat for 40 something years, I think it's a very viable and rewarding way of eating. But I know a lot of people like meat, love meat, feel they need meat. And the good thing about eating in a more anti-inflammatory way is that you get benefit if you do, you know, the more you do, the more benefit you get. So I think if you want to eat some meat, you're still going to get benefit if you can clean up your processed food eating, if you can, you know, not eat an excess of meat. And I think that, you know, the cleaner the meat, the less processed the meat is, the better quality it is. That's all good too. But, you know, people who have, I don't know if you've heard of the blue zones, but those are areas in the late 20th century that had the highest percentage of centenarians. You know, they basically ate 95 to 100% plant-based. And so I think over and over we've seen in research studies and in places where they've had the healthiest and longest lived peoples that their diet is primarily plant-based. But in some cases, they do eat some meat as well. So, you know, I'm not someone to say, you know, always say no, but for me, plant-based is really great. And I know many, many people who are thriving on a plant-based diet, who came back from heart disease on a plant-based diet. But I understand if people want to eat a little bit, and you'll still get benefit if you can be clean.
All right, we're talking with Linda Tyler, author of the Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about the vegetable oil processed fake meat, which you see like a Burger King, the Impossible Burger. It's got like 25 ingredients. Is that healthy? Does that fit into your diet? Also wanted to ask you about Bill Gates' lab-grown meat, which is stem cells taken from cow, sheep, pigs, mixed with fetal blood, put in a steel vat. I'll get into all that when we get back. But because this is some of the things, the way our nutrition is changing. Also eating insects. Now, I would like your thoughts on animal welfare with that. And we had Nicole Kidman actually eat live bugs on camera for Vanity Fair to show that eating insects is high protein, good for you food. But anyway, we'll get back. We'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams, by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mom, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Selbos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
Unleashing the Beast. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're continuing our talk with Linda Tyler, author of the new book, The Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook, Delicious Whole Food Recipes to Reduce Inflammation and Promote Health. All right, this first question is just practically, when you travel or don't have many options, you know, if you had to go into a McDonald's, what's the healthiest thing to order? Is there salads healthy, or should you get it without dressing? Are the condiments healthy? You know, is it almost impossible in today's culture? Like, I'm talking about going through an airport, going to any fast food restaurant. What should people focus on if they can't eat, you know, perfectly, if they want to eat at least somewhat healthy in these places?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it is very tough to eat healthy, especially at a McDonald's. McDonald's, I think, hasn't introduced a vegan burger. I think they tried it in Canada or something and decided not to do it. So yeah, I would think the salad is the best option, with dressing on the side, and because their dressing is probably, you know, at least half oil, I would use as little dressing as possible. But I think the dressing is, you know, the salad is the healthiest ingredient. Some airports have more vegan options. We have in our Portland airport, we have a place that sells a lot of bowls, the Yum Cafe, and you can get edamame rice with a vegan sauce with black beans, you know. So more and more restaurants, more and more airports do have restaurants that have some good healthy vegan options. You do have to, you know your stuff, even do a little work ahead of time, because it's by far not the norm. So it does, again, just like in the grocery store, it takes a little work to find the whole foods.
Well, you know, just real quick, not to tout another book, but I read a book called The Thin Commandments years ago, written by Stephen Gullo, and he's a food strategist. He didn't really get into nutrition at all. But the idea was, and I've followed this, and I ended up losing 70 pounds, kept it off. It's been about 12 years. But the strategy was what I just mentioned. You carry almost a lunchbox with you when you travel. You never put yourself at the mercy of an airport or fast food. You have what you want to eat available at all times to at least give you an underlying base. And it was amazing, because the food strategy is how you sort of incorporate that. But anyway, I just throw that out.
I'd like to sort of pause there, because that's so important. And, you know, I think it's hard for people if they, you know, because they're so busy, they've drifted into, let's get takeout, let's get food delivered, let's go out for lunch. I mean, it is a change to say, no, I need to make more food at home, because it's going to be healthier. It is going to be healthier. You know, restaurants use, and carts and all those places use, a lot of salt and oil and cheese and butter. And it's so important to start to, you know, make food for yourself, food that you know what's in it. And, you know, that habit and that, you know, extra bit of dedication does take some work, but it's so worth it. And you will notice it, just like you did.
Well, real quick, just rapid answers here. Like, is oatmeal from the grocery store healthy? You know, steel cut oats or any other kind of instant oats where you add hot water? People think that's a healthy breakfast. Is it?
The kind where you just add hot water is not that healthy, usually because it has a lot of sugar in that packet as well. But anything, especially old fashioned oats, especially steel cut oats, or if you can even get oat groats, which are whole oats, those are great. So I would say the, you know, Quaker old fashioned oats that you put in the microwave for 2 or 3 minutes, those are healthy And steel-cut oats are even healthier. They just stay in your system that much longer because the body has to break them down.
Right, what about popcorn made with olive oil, or popcorn air-popped, sprayed olive oil on top, virgin olive oil? Is that healthy?
Popcorn with any kind of oil starts to get, at least calorically, it starts to add up. But, you know, air pop popcorn, if you can eat it without oil, is, you know, that fills me up, I know, and it fills people up. So, yeah, that's fine.
But what about, what oils are healthy? Is olive oil healthy? Is, what's that other? Not, I know vegetable oils not, but... Avocado. Is that healthy?
Yeah.
Give us the healthy oils.
Well, I can't say that any oils are healthy, really. I have a post on my graciousvegan.com blog called "What's Wrong with Oil?" Because every time I tell people, "Well, I don't eat oil," they say, "What's wrong with oil?"
And it is vegetable oil. Don't they just get broccoli and squeeze the oil out of it? Isn't that what vegetable oil is?
No. I mean, if you think about oil, it's squeezed from healthy foods, but all the fiber and protein and most of the nutrients are left behind. So you have a bunch of soybeans that are squeezed, their oils over here and all the good stuff's over there. Same with olive oil. It takes like 22 olives to make a tablespoon of olive oil. So you have all that fiber and protein on the olive. Nobody's eating that. They're just eating the oil. And except for very high-end avocado and olive oils, you know, there's a lot of processing. They have to take all the color. It's almost opaque when they squeeze it out of these seeds and beans and corn and olives. And so they treat it with chemicals to make it clear. And then they treat it with chemicals to take the smell out. So they're very chemically treated. And so having a lot of oil is just not good for you. And it does damage the inner lining of your blood vessels. And we're not evolved to process oil. So the body is like, the body doesn't realize how high in calories, like 120 calories per tablespoon oil is. So we could eat a lot of oil and gain a lot of weight. Our body just isn't equipped to control for that and to stop our hunger.
Then all you got to do is take Ozempic. Doesn't that take care of the weight gain? All right. CNN, this is, well, first of all, plant-based burgers, the Impossible Burger, many variations of this. They look like meat, taste like meat, have the texture of meat. This is what a CNN nutritionist had to say. Are plant-based burgers good for you? If you're choosing to eat these for health, you may want to reconsider. The Beyond Burger has less saturated fat than the beef or Impossible Burger, 6 grams, but a similar calorie count per patty. Turkey Burger only has 4 to 5 grams. They go on to say that essentially there's like, I think there's at least 24 different processed ingredients in these plant-based burgers. Do you advocate for plant-based burgers? Would you eat one? Are they healthy? And are they certified vegan?
They are certified vegan, and I do not eat them. I have tried them. The first time I tried them, to me, as I said, I haven't eaten meat in 40 years. They were too close to meat for me because I hadn't tasted meat. So it's like, I don't want this. And so that was tricky for me. And they aren't super healthy. No, they're not whole food. They are processed food. One of the burgers uses a soybean isolate, protein isolate, and the other uses a pea-based protein isolate. So whenever you hear the word isolate, that means something's been isolated out of the whole food. And so I don't eat them. My husband does eat them. He's not as committed to whole food plant-based as I am, but because of my animal welfare concerns, I'm glad he's eating those and not eating beef. So, I think that the mission statements of those two organizations, Beyond and Impossible, is definitely related to animal welfare. Let's stop killing animals. So in that regard, I respect them and I am happy that people are eating them and that people like them. But in terms of part of a healthy diet, if you're really committing to a healthy diet, no, they wouldn't be part of it.
I never actually had one, but I have heard reviews that it apparently gives people gas or flatulence on the other end because of all the oils. I don't know if that's true for everyone.
I haven't heard that.
Okay, well, here's a question for you. You're worried about animal welfare. Well, Bill Gates may have the solution. He is promoting, along with Richard Branson, billions of dollars to create lab-grown meat. Now, this has nothing to do with like vegetable oil process. Essentially, they get stem cells from a sheep, cow, pig, mix it with fetal blood, put it in a petri dish, then a steel vat. It's sort of amorphous. My understanding is there's no bone structure even. It's sort of this blob that grows. And then they add antibiotics, texture additives, color, and they eventually print it on a 3D printer. Not making that part up. They brag about it. It looks like real food. So, a couple questions there. That's obviously not certified vegan. It's meat. But would that be a meat that has any nutritional problem, or would it be exact? Now, it's heavily processed if they're adding textures and food dye and they're doing presentation. But what would give me your health analysis of a lab-grown piece of meat, which technically is meat because it's derived from the stem cell. So it genetically is meat.
Yeah, we're getting into all of these funny intersections of meat and plant-based foods now. Yeah, so it's an amazing idea. And again, we talked about technology in the 1970s, and we're sort of getting into now early 21st century technology that's taking us in new directions. And cultured meat, it's sometimes called, because they, you know, as you say, they put this stuff in vats and then it grows and grows and grows, and they have a lot of it, and then they push it through these 3D printers to create shapes that people recognize. So this is sort of the ultimate here. Okay, here's the taste of meat because it's real meat. Here's the shape of meat. Now, why are we killing animals? You know, so can we transition to this? It's better for the environment. It's better for the animals. I have not seen a lot of nutritional information, but it does seem, you know, I would assume it's going to be similar to meat because it really is meat. So I assume it's going to have some of the saturated fat issues if it's, you know, if it's cultured.
Who knows? They might be able to genetically engineer it to be fat-free. I mean, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
All right. And final question, just 10 seconds. Would you eat the bugs? Yeah, that's another thing.
Yuck. No? I don't want to, no.
Okay. All right. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Linda Thank Tyler, you. Author of the Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. Thank you for being on the show today on Unleashed.
Thank you so much.
All right, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.